This episode is sponsored by Feather Snack. Okay, hold on, y'all. I have to tell you about something that my wife got us into and that my whole family is loving now. Brace yourselves. It's the Feather Snap Scout Smart Bird Feeder. Yes, I said bird feeder. This thing is so cool, and it offers a brand new way to connect with nature and learn about the birds right in your own backyard. Or, if you're like us, living in New York City, it's in your friend's backyard in the country, and you get to use the app connected to it to learn all the stuff. It's got this high-resolution camera that connects to an app, so you can check out a live stream from your feeder. You can take photos and videos of the birds that visit. You can ID the species using expert-trained AI, and you can earn badges along the way. You can even, y'all, learn fun facts about hundreds of species. For example, did you know that American crows can recognize and remember people's faces? And they can even teach their young who's a friend and who's a foe? I know that now, did you? Seriously, the Feather Snap Feeder is entertaining, it's educational, and it's just a whole bunch of fun for the whole family. Check them out today at feathersnapcam.com. That's feathersnapcam.com. All right, y'all. I just want to take a quick second to talk about our sponsor, Sunbasket. I don't know if you know this about me, but I am not a big fan of grocery shopping or meal planning or anything that goes along with any of that. But I do very much care about eating healthy. But when you don't like to grocery shop or plan meals, it is really hard to cook healthy dinners for your family. And that's where Sunbasket comes in. They're a team of dietitians and chefs that design wholesome, nutritious, and delicious meal kits delivered to your door. Each week, you can choose from a brand new selection of quick and easy meal kit recipes with a wide variety of dietary options, plus dozens of snacks, salads, breakfast items, and more. And you can pick and choose from recipe options like vegetarian, Mediterranean, carb conscious, the list goes on. We just had orzo bowls with broccoli, sun-dried tomatoes, and pea stew, and it was delicious. My kids even liked them. I can't speak to Sunbasket more. I love them. Thanks to Sunbasket's commitments to clean ingredients and organic fresh produce, there's no easier way to eat your very, very best. You just have to go to sunbasket.com/queerfam today to save $120 across your first four deliveries. That's sunbasket.com/queerfam to save $120, y'all, across your first four deliveries, plus free shipping on your first order. Go do that. Get some healthy food. There you go. This episode is brought to you by Hello Tushy and the new podcast, We Are Family. We're happy to have them on board making the show a possibility.
We are.
We really are. A lot.
Welcome to If These Ovaries Could Talk. I'm Jamie.
I'm Robin.
And we're your hosts.
We sure are.
Love is love. If you don't have to make a family by taking a traditional ride. If these ovaries could talk, it would say.
How do I get the sperm through custom?
I am a lesbian.
So gay.
We need to tell our story.
It's not your nuclear family anymore. It's not just your mom and dad thing.
We're not ruining these little humans.
Not for the gay reason.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Welcome back to Our Ovaries.
That sounded super weird.
It's always weird because our title of our show is weird.
Get into our ovaries.
So weird. So many jokes can be made about our ovaries.
So many.
So many. Are they really that funny?
I mean, we think they're jokes, but probably not.
No. Our ovaries
funny?
But
we just keep doing them.
We do.
I mean, I think that's like our general, like, we just keep doing it whether anyone asked us to or not.
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay. We're going to do a really, really short intro today.
It's
because
going well so far, too.
Jamie, I was trying to get us out of the badness, so let's just pretend it didn't happen. So we're going to do a really short intro today because we're doing, for the first time, we're doing a collaboration with another podcast.
Yes.
Where it's called Transparency podcast, and it's a new podcast with Mia and Ronnie.
Mm-hmm.
And they wrote us and wanted to like to be on our podcast, and we were like, better yet, let's do the podcast together. So this podcast is gonna air for us on If These Ovaries Could Talk and on Transparency. This
we're
interview.
Like, we're really going out into left field here. We are thinking outside.
Look at
the
us,
box.
Jamie.
I know.
Well, we're like blowing the box up.
Yeah, we are. The box. You hear that? We said box. Ew,
back
what
back
is
down to
wrong
dirty thinking.
With me?
What's going on, Jamie? It's like 9 a.m. Settle down.
I know. Well, anyway, it's a great episode. We want to get you guys into it. Also, it's a very important episode.
Correct.
Very important.
But before we roll the interview, we just want to say a special thanks to our newest Patreon member, Jessica Pierce.
Thank you, Jessica.
Thank you, Jessica.
Love you. And if you'd like to join our Patreon community for all kinds of bonus content, we're talking videos, we're talking swag for joining, all you have to do is head over to patreon.com/ovariestalk and you will be living the life of our ovaries.
Jamie, I'm literally just watching you be so weird this morning. It's amazing. let's roll the interview. Let's bring in Mia and Ronnie from the Transparency podcast.
It's so good.
Helen, roll the tape.
Helen, wake up.
Now.
Helen, wake up.
It's 9 o'clock. She should be up.
Well, hello, hello, hello.
Hi.
Hi, guys.
Introduce yourselves.
Hi, everyone. I am Mia. I go by Big Mama around this house.
Yes.
I'm Rhonda, and most of the time, everyone calls me Ronnie.
And you don't have like a Big Mama? You're not like Small Mama?
He has no cool nickname.
No, it's just Ronnie.
All cool mom things are mine.
I feel like Ronnie's a cool nickname.
I do too.
Anyway.
I do too.
I think so.
I'm Jamie.
And I'm Robin.
And I go by Jamie. Well,
she goes by Jamie. But she has a weird spelling of her name and it makes her mad when people misspell it.
Robin likes to make Google Docs and drive me slightly crazy.
It's true, I do.
A little bit.
It's true.
Yeah.
For everyone who's tuning in, whether you're on the Transparency podcast or the If These Ovaries Could Talk podcast, Mia and Ronnie reached out to us. And we were like, we had a conversation about like possibly being a guest on the podcast. And we were like, yes, obviously.
Yes.
And then we were like, okay, well, let's do something cool. And we decided we were going to do the first ever collaboration with another podcast where we would, you know, work together and it'd be like a dual episode. And so we're going to all do elevator pitches and introduce ourselves.
It's exciting. And I'm so glad you guys reached out. This is a conversation that needs to happen, but let's not get ahead of ourselves.
You are ahead of yourself, Jamie.
Elevator pitch, do it. I'm checking out now.
Oh my God.
We just got challenged.
Jamie, we just got like handled.
We got challenged. I'm good with that. Last time we tried this, we were a mess.
We got 30 seconds, Jamie. We are doing it. You go first. And we're going to explain our relationships plus the podcast in 30 seconds. Jamie, we got this.
Okay.
On your mark, get set, go, Jamie.
Hi, I'm Jamie. I am married to my wife. We've been together 12 years. We have two children, a 6-year-old and a 2-year-old. Who are driving us crazy right now during this crazy COVID time.
Okay, I'm Robin, and I'm married to Mary. And Mary likes to say that I'm Miranda Hobbs, and she is Steve, standing behind me holding the bag. And we have a podcast called If These Ovaries Could Talk. Go, Jamie.
It's, oh my God, it's all about being queer parents and elevating and uplifting our queer
and getting
families.
Our stories out there. 32 seconds. Holy crap, that's stressful.
Okay.
That's super like fast and to get all that information in at once. Like
I have a newfound respect for what we're doing to people. I apologize to everyone we've ever done that to. Oh,
God. Okay.
As Ronnie talks a lot, so this is going to take her.
I don't know about these guys.
On your mark, get set, go.
Hi, everyone. I'm Big Mama Mia. I am a tech consultant and product manager. I am also co-host of Transparency Podcast with my beautiful now fiance. As of this weekend, we have three children. They are 14, 7, and 2. We live in the DMV area. And
I am Ronnie, and I'm the romantic that just proposed over the weekend to my now fiance. And I'm a queer mom. We have three beautiful children, age 14, 7, and 2. I had to think about that. And
I just said 2 seconds.
Oh, you did? Okay, I think we went over our time. Go ahead.
Well, listen, 45 seconds.
I was too busy thinking about.
Yeah, you could have gotten that. That could have been 35 seconds.
You're right. Mm-hmm.
Wait a second. Congratulations.
Oh my God. Thank you.
Ronnie, how'd you do it?
We didn't know.
I had a very nice quarantine proposal.
Okay, so
sorry.
How I did it. I originally was going to propose in Bali in April and COVID hit. So all of that went to crap. So I didn't have a ring and also didn't have Bali. So I decided to recreate Bali in the backyard. We just bought a home. We just moved in our new home in March and our backyard is enormous. So I just went above and beyond. I rented a tent and all sorts of.
It was like tent and tiki torches, glistening lights. It was very cute.
Wow.
Torches and literally did the whole Bali thing in the backyard. I just literally just pulled up all these pictures of Bali and just recreated it. And then surprised her, and I told her that we were going on a date night and get all dressed up and cute. I got a temporary ring because I still didn't have the ring that I paid $1 gazillion for. And she came home to meet us to go out. And to her surprise, we were in the backyard waiting.
Oh, my God. And Mia, you had no idea?
I had no idea. I was like powering through the front door because I'm like, we're going to be late for this date. And everyone was in the backyard and it was gorgeous. And there were like, will you marry me masks on? And it was just very, very gorgeous.
Oh, I forgot that detail. Yeah.
Ronnie's a romantic.
Wow, you really put some thought into this.
Thank you. A month prior, we've been stuck in a house together. She decided to leave out one day. And I was like, oh my God, this is my opportunity. So I called her parents, and she has a stepmom and her dad and then her mom and her stepdad. So I called them all on FaceTime. I was like, hey, I need you guys' blessing. Are you, you know, I want to propose, but she's been in the house with me and she's too nosy. So I need you to tell me now, do I have your blessing or not? And speak quickly. So it all worked out.
Did you take pictures? Did you put them up on the social? Are they around?
There are pictures on our social.
Congratulations.
Yes. Thank you.
So excited.
So let's talk about you guys reaching out to us. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So we started this podcast and it was obviously Transparency Podcast. We got a lot of good feedback on it. But then the next thing that I thought is like, you know, we're talking to our friends, people who know us, people who are used to our platform, like who is someone else that we can talk to that we can get these very important messages across to. And so I just did some research and listened to a few of you guys' episodes. And I'm like, they sound really sweet. And like, they'd be open to this. I'm just going to shoot my shot and send a message. They're going to say yes, or they're going to say no. But I think that we could have some good chemistry in this conversation. And that's what I really wanted. Someone that we could have chemistry with, someone that I felt like would be willing to like learn and share their audience with us. Because I feel like all of this is a little part of our hearts.
I agree 100%. And we tell our listeners all the time, if you write to us, chances are we're going to write you back. And we might be like, do you want to be on the podcast? You should be on the podcast. Come on the podcast.
Be on our podcast.
Yeah, so we're really glad you reached out because, you know, we want to talk about queer parenting, of course, and being gay mothers, but also being Black queer parents. And that's what your podcast focuses on.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's all about Black womanhood and Black queerness and queer motherhood. And you said, the intersection of all of those things, Black and queer and motherhood and anything that falls underneath of that umbrella.
I love it. And I think everybody knows that it's so necessary.
Yeah.
Representation matters.
It does.
Yes. So it's kind of the reason we started with a Facebook group. I was in, you know, when you become a mom, you're in all these little mommy groups and mommy and me this and mommy and me that. And so I felt like I had to choose between like queer groups or Black mother groups and or like and then just like also like Black lesbian groups. So there was nothing that like catered to all of those things. And I'm like, there are some conversations I need to have. And I want for my kids to see families that look like ours every so often. So yeah, I just was like, I talked to Ronnie and I was like, let's start this group. And so we started a Facebook group and now it has 1,000 members. So it just makes me feel wonderful every time I get on there. It's just like an abyss of like Black queer moms like me who want to talk about the things that I want to talk about. And they have questions about like things that I also had questions about.
It's great. And there was clearly a void for it.
Yeah.
Which is what we learned when we started our podcast. There was a void for families like ours.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's like Facebook is a pile of steaming, you know, poo a lot of times, but it's really great for those specific groups. Like we've been able to find so many groups and so many people that we can talk to and that we're pulling guests from, and that it's just been such a great resource. And I know that there's just reading the messages, there's so many people that just are going through it, whether as queer parents or whatever they're going through. And there's always someone who's like, oh, I've been through that. It's those groups are fantastic.
Absolutely. I mean, to me, I think I was impressed because, you know, even today I woke up and I wake up to a lot of messages on the group chat and everyone's talking about different resources for known donors and how to legalize this and how to legalize it. The resources are endless there because of the network that we created. And so I was pretty impressed. It was all your vision.
The trend this week has been like, how can we find Black donors?
Yeah.
That's what I talk about
that a lot. Yeah. Is that the void.
There's like a shortage.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of Black
donors. Why do you think that is?
I honestly don't know. Yeah. I would think that, well, for one, I feel like Black people in general have things with medical care and not wanting to go to the doctor for many things.
Oh, facts.
Yeah. So I think that that's probably part of it. I also think that some time ago, I may have heard that like maybe Black babies weren't as in demand, or maybe Black men aren't being paid as much.
I wondered if some of that was going on in terms of the selection. Yeah.
You know what? I wonder if it's the sperm banks are not like advertising
that's what I mean.
In Black communities. Yeah. Mm-hmm. For donors, and that's a big possibility. Yeah.
That's weird because that's normally something that Mia would have read up on by now. And
she's Mia. And
got all of me.
No, I didn't do my homework.
I wonder. Well, if anybody's listening and has answers to this, write in. Let us know because I wonder what that's about.
Yeah.
And are your guys' kids donor conceived?
They are not. So our 2-year-old, I had outside of our relationship. And then I think we met, she was maybe two months old.
Oh my!
And
goodness.
It was like my first time like out of the house, and here we are. So
My story is a bit different. I've actually been married before to a man, unhappily, obviously. And, but I was married before, and both of my, the 14-year-old and 7-year-old came out of that marriage. And so.
Big, happy, blended family realness.
Wow.
I love a good blended family. I love those stories because so nice when people find each other and it all comes together and works.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We've talked to a lot of blended families. Both of us have donor-conceived kids.
We will definitely be reaching out for some, well, maybe, not definitely.
You going to have another one?
Maybe.
Uh-oh. Oh, hey.
There are some mornings where it's like, let's just have another one. We're in this together. And then the other mornings we're like.
Even with a 2-year-old in the house.
I wish everyone could see Ronnie's face right now because I don't know that Ronnie's all in the same space as Mia.
Like, don't do that.
Eyes as wide as saucers.
Earlier today.
Okay, so Robin.
Yeah.
I have something very important to talk to our listeners about.
Okay, well, go ahead.
Do you have a baby on the way, listeners?
No, I don't.
Do you have a sensitive vagina?
Well,
a sensitive butt?
I mean.
Well, now you can clean more gently and more hygienically.
I mean, yeah. This is a product that is really for anyone with a vagina or a butthole, which is all of us, really. It's, I mean, right?
Yeah,
it's not just for pregnant folks. The Hello Tushy, although it is really good for pregnant folks, the Hello Tushy cleans your butt and or vagina with a precise stream of water. It's hard to be serious. precise stream of fresh water. Aimed right at all the important parts. No more uncomfortable, messy wiping, which I love.
I mean, it's really hard to believe that when we go to the bathroom in this country, most of us wipe instead of wash.
It is counterintuitive.
It is so archaic when you think about it. I love the Hello Tushy. I love it. It's only $79 and it attaches to your existing toilet and it requires no electricity or additional plumbing and takes less time to set up than your new crib. Seriously. I've been wanting a bidet for years, but they've always been so expensive, so I've never gotten one.
Yeah, I mean, other bidets, like, not that I've done a ton of searching, but I have done some clicking, you know. They've cost thousands of dollars, and the Hello Tushy Modern Bidet Attachment is here to democratize the blessings bestowed by bidets and offer clean buttholes to everyone.
Also, I love them for writing that.
I do, too. that's a tough thing to say.
I know it is. You did a good job. Americans have had yucky buttholes for way too long. Mm-hmm. It is time to evolve, folks.
Plus, Hello Tushy cuts toilet paper use by 80%. So the Hello Tushy bidet pays for itself in a few months. So it's time to ditch paper products and uncomfortable chafing when you switch to the soothing, cleansing stream of water from Hello Tushy Bidet Attachment. Get it?
I love it. And every Hello Tushy Bidet Attachment comes with a 60-day risk-free guarantee and a 12-month warranty.
That's amazing. It's time to clean our buttholes, guys. Go to the hellotushy.com/ovaries to get 10% off.
I'll say this. Your baby registry isn't complete without visiting hellotushy.com/ovaries for 10% off.
Hellotushy.com/ovaries. Clean
your butt. Clean
your
vaginas, guys.
Please.
Let's talk about parenting during the time of the COVID and quarantining.
I'm just super surprised that all of us lived through this.
we survived.
Seriously.
Do you mean didn't get the coronavirus or just you made it through together?
All of it.
All of the above.
We survived COVID parenting.
Yes. In the very large grocery bills that came with
it. Oh my God, I know.
I know. Isn't it crazy how much money you spend on food when you're home all the time?
All the time.
What the?
And me cooking three meals a day and homeschooling. And then the girls miss their friends. So they're very clingy and needy.
Yep.
Like want to play all the time. It's taking a lot of patience.
Yeah. And I lose my temper way more than I should. And I really have learned I don't have much patience. No.
I always say to Jamie, we're all starting at a 7. You're never alone, so you never get to reset back to like a 1. Yes. So you're just like a hair trigger.
And, you know, to that point, I think that it also affected, you know, our relationship in a sense that we never had time to spend with each other. We had to make up date nights, like doing puzzles together.
Okay, puzzles that we never finished.
Right.
Yeah, you never get to finish them. You don't get to finish
them. Because the romance, it was just like far in between at that point. It's like, okay, we're trying to survive now. So when we get to bed, we're asleep.
Yep.
And then trying to explain to my job that it's not like me being in the office. Like when I'm not in a meeting, I'm probably feeding someone or taking someone to the potty or taking myself to the potty or feeding myself. Like I'm doing things or nursing or, you know, setting someone up for a Zoom class or a Microsoft Teams class or helping to get through, you know, one page of a chapter book after 50 million hours.
And I have to pause at that. Or helping me with a math problem that I'm about to just go crazy over. Because when I try to teach it, they're just like...
Yeah, and that doesn't help that they're not very open to her teaching styles. They would rather wait for me. Yeah. And it shows in their attitudes.
Uh-oh. Yeah, I keep getting in power struggles with my kids. Like the teaching. Like I'm just like, do it this way. And it's like, that doesn't help anybody.
I'm so tired of the homeschooling.
Oh, so glad it's over.
You guys have a 7 and a 14-year-old.
Yes.
The two oldest.
Yes.
So you're like, I have a 6-year-old and a 2-year-old. So we're in the same stage, but you have an extra one on top.
Yes.
That you have every single stage. It's horrible.
Yeah. Oh, we have every single stage. We're going through all the phases at all times.
So you can imagine when she's in a meeting, I'm trying to manage all three of them by myself. Huh? You do this worksheet. Why are you not finished that by
and
now?
You go get your iPad because it's not your turn right now. Yeah.
And meanwhile, the 2-year-old is just all over you or trying to run out of the house or trying to climb up onto a counter and jump off.
Or having a breakdown for...
Yeah, she's having a crybaby. It's everything hurts her feelings.
Yeah.
Her feelings.
She says, owie, when her feelings get...
Yeah, she said, she'll go, ow, ow, ow. No one's hurting you.
Yeah, no, my son fake cries now. He fakes it.
Oh, God.
It's a thing. It's a whole thing. And then my daughter, he's faking it. He's not crying. I didn't even touch him.
See, that's our 14-year-old talking about our 7-year-old. She just wants your attention. She's not. There's nothing actually wrong.
Wow.
But we're making it through.
Yes, I think.
We're going to make it through this, guys. We're going to be stronger.
I think we all have a deeper appreciation for teachers.
Oh, my God, right?
Every day.
I mean, I always knew that I didn't want to homeschool. I always knew I didn't want to be a stay-at-home mom. I knew this.
See, I'm different.
I don't know, guys, because she right
now. I was team, like, let's homeschool, world school, let's do all the things. And I'm still, like, team those things. I can see how, like, our schedule works better for the types of learners our kids are.
Yeah.
I can see that. The good mom part of me feels like I'm so grateful for this extra time with you guys. That's awesome because that's what I should say. And then, but yeah, I think the hard part for me has been keeping up with the way that their schools want me to teach.
Yeah. And that's you have a full-time job at the same time.
Yeah.
When you homeschool, you're not also trying to take conference calls and do work. Like that's the part that is like, if I could get any one task done without getting up and being like, did you do this? And then sitting back down. Did you do this? Sitting back down. You cannot work that way. And that's the hardest part. All right. Well, let's do a little bit of a right turn. It's not really a right turn, but it's one of the things we wanted to talk about. The intersection of COVID and the BLM movement and queer folks.
Yeah.
I love what you wrote in your bullet points. You said we have 2 pandemics.
Yeah.
Most definitely have 2 pandemics happening in the United States of America right now.
Mm-hmm.
And the BLM movement, the Black Lives Matter movement, needs to be spoken about and be kept being brought up and being brought to attention, right? Because it's so, I feel like this could so easily just fall back down by the wayside.
Yeah.
Oh, like absolutely. How many times and before?
Right.
Yeah, we can't lose the momentum this time. And one thing that I've been extra intentional about is that this movement can't leave Black queer women behind.
Yes.
Black women behind, because as we've seen, things typically lose steam after Black men get whatever they feel is enough justice and the world feels like that's enough because men are like up yeah. here, then things lose steam, and that can't happen this time.
Yeah.
We're saying all of the girls' names this time.
Yes, say their names, and the Black trans women as well. Say yes, their names,
especially Black trans women,
because yes. they're getting a big brunt of this, and as they always yeah. do.
Like we're at the intersection of things that two things that disproportionately affect us: mm-hmm. racism, and then COVID as well, and how it's spreading through our communities and our lack of adequate medical care and attention. Right. Yep. Just because Black women are often seen as stronger. So like things like maternal care, you can, you know, I don't know how many stories I've read where women have died after saying that they're in pain because doctors don't really believe that you're in that much pain.
Yeah. Yeah. They don't get meds, right? That's like a recurring thing that happens.
Yeah. It's so archaic. It goes all the way back to, I just read that the first doctors who performed surgeries would perform surgeries on slave women. Yeah. Without anesthesia, because they thought they didn't feel pain.
Yeah. I mean, there was the study, I just watched the video on it, where they asked doctors, last year, the same question. And they truly believed that if you had Black skin, that your skin was thicker, so you felt less pain.
What?
This was not old slave time news.
Like the medical community.
Yes.
You know, that's disgusting.
What the actual fuck? It's crazy. Yes. Sorry, I had to swear there. This isn't, this is
Jamie, you act as if we don't swear all the time. Don't try to act nicer than you are right now, Jamie. You can't pull that shit off.
I'm really baffled by, I mean, I shouldn't be baffled because this is the world we live in. This is the system we live in.
Absolutely.
But I can't believe that. That makes me want to cry. Really.
Yeah, it's difficult. I mean, even when I think about the impact that this time is having on our kids, like on one hand, they're missing their friends, they're missing their teachers, they're missing their other familiar relationships, cousins, aunties, everyone else. And then now we're also saying, you know, all these people are outside protesting for your livelihood. What do you want to do, kids? Like, because you know, tell us how you would like for us to help support you and what you want to do for this movement. So they're like, okay, we can or we can't go outside, and we can or we can't be in groups, you know? And I'm like, we're going to have to choose our battle, because one of these things has existed for a very long time, and one of these things is new to us.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think the first conversation we had was with our 14-year-old, because mm-hmm. he's more exposed to, you know, news and, you know, seeing, you know, different things on loops. And we wanted to be there to help him process those things. And I think that psychologically, it definitely takes a toll on, you know, Black kids. And, you know, not just like you said, it's not just one pandemic we're dealing with. It's just, mm-hmm. you know, that the whole deal, okay, there's so many people in the world dying from COVID, but then, you know, we have the police brutality and mm-hmm. things like that we're dealing with. So I think on both hands, it's just, it's a stressor.
Yeah. Yeah. And we need for our kids to be safe even after COVID.
Right.
There's life on the other side of this pandemic. And we've seen how not that our country is handling it the same way, but we've seen other countries are now coming out on the other side of it. Mm-hmm. And for us, we have to acknowledge that on the other side of this, racism is still going to be there. So what moves do we need to take now for playing the long game?
Yeah, we've eradicated this pandemic. Now, what are you going to do about this systemic pandemic that has been going mm-hmm. on since the beginning of this country and even before that?
Yeah.
What are we going to do?
Absolutely.
How are we going to keep this going?
That point you made was really interesting about there's like a little bit of progress and then it's enough for somebody. And then right. it gets sort of dropped. And it's, I that's something I keep thinking about how do we not, it almost reminds me of the Trump news cycle. Like we get outraged by something he did. And then it's like the next day we're outraged by something else or like gun violence. Like it, we're outraged. There's another school shooting. And then we go about our days and then we come back to, it's like, we're, I feel like as a country, we're in a place where these, we keep doing that. So like, how do
we? I think Jamie brought up a good point earlier. She said something about that we keep talking about it. So I feel like a lot of what I've seen in the media is that no one's talking about protests anymore. No one's really talking about those things, but they're still happening.
Yeah. Right?
So absolutely. Platforms like yours, platforms like ours, we keep talking about it because now we have things like Twitter and Instagram and Apple Podcasts and Spotify, all these other places where people are getting their news. It's no longer just up to CNN to put a spotlight on what's important and what's not. Or, you know, your Bloomberg articles or whoever, it's no longer on them to say what's important enough for us to be speaking about when we have all of these platforms that give our, that lift our voices up.
Yeah. I mean, and it, as white people in this country, we have an obligation. I was just reading, So You Want to Talk About Race? And something that has stuck with me ever since I read it was, you know, as white people, it's not enough on your social media. Like, it's not enough to just share a post. Don't just share a post, actually share it and put your words on top of it as a white person to be an ally, to be an anti-racist, to help this thing forward. Because just sharing it is, that's just like face value. That's like, here I am, I'm sharing this post because I believe in this movement, but it's not.
It's like you're the
not,
least thing you can do. Is that what you're saying, Jamie?
Yeah, it's lazy.
Right.
And it's not fighting the fight that needs to be fought.
One of the things that, and I hadn't thought of it, one of the things that one of my coworkers does well, she's also a white woman. She'll say, you know, I'm blocking off this part of my day to go make phone calls on behalf of this person or go and make, you know, write letters to on behalf of this person or donate to this. If you want to join me, let me know. I can, you know, send you the resources that I'm using, but just so you know, don't contact me during this part of the day because this is what I'm going to be doing.
That's really interesting.
So we're sharing, but not putting the burden on anyone else, but also letting, like, it makes me feel supported at work. Like someone understands that there might be other things on my mind other than this work.
Right. or that it's not your job to explain to us what your plight is. It's our job to do the research and find out what's happening and how we can help. It's not your job to do that.
Can we talk about that a little bit? Like we, cause
yes,
we, that's one of the things that like, I think has started to come up in the last like 5 or 10 years. It used to be this whole like, and hopefully I'm saying this well, we all know that I don't say many things well. So I feel like that's a good, you know, precursor for anything I'm about to say.
She but means like, well.
I really do. I have a good heart. No, but like, there used to be this like, oh, like I think a feeling of a lot of people be like, I'll ask my black friend about that. And it's like, that's a horrible burden to be putting on your one black friend to speak for all black people and to not do your own research. Like, can you speak a little bit to that? Like,
you know, people don't think about the emotional labor that comes with those questions. You know, you could be triggering someone when talking about the like these police brutality, Black death, all these things are triggering for a lot of people.
Yeah.
I think the first thing that if you are going to ask someone a question, I always say, don't come to my house empty-handed. Don't come to the table empty-handed. Like, do show me that you did something on your own. Like, I'm on top of like, okay, I can fill in the gaps or add on my perspective, but I can't, or I don't want to have to teach you from ground zero. I want to know that you've done at least some of the work on your own. I think you also need to just evaluate your relationship with, you know, your black friend or black coworker or whoever before you just dive in the deep and like, what do I do about racism?
Yeah, that's true because
I'm so glad you asked me that, Mia.
Right.
I'm gonna tell you.
And talk about it. And then there are certain black, you know, people who don't mind sitting down with you, like, hey, this is what it is. Like, I'm one of those people. I believe in educating, you know, I'm like, sit down, let's have a conversation. This is the do or, you know, the do's and do nots. And, you know, this is what you should ask. This is what's appropriate. This is what's not appropriate. In my own opinion. And I'll add that on the end. Because I don't speak for all black people. But I don't mind. The way I see it is if we want, you know, non-blacks or whites to be more educated and be more informed, we have to be willing to teach. Mm-hmm. But then again, one point she made is everybody's not a teacher.
Right.
Everybody's not.
Yes.
And it's a conversation we had, you know, in the background one day, and she was like, well, everybody's not there. And I was like, you know what? I didn't think of it like that.
Yeah.
So I guess the burden, you know, more so goes on people like me who are willing to teach. Like, I'm willing to sit down and have a conversation, have those difficult conversations. Like, hey, what question do you want to ask?
Yeah.
Because, you know, some people, they feel so uncomfortable to have those conversations that they're just like, okay, I'm not going to ask, so then I'm not going to learn. So that's why I like what you said, mm-hmm. doing your own research, you know, doing your own reading or whatever you need to do to figure out what it is that you're trying to learn or how you can make a difference. That's really important.
Yeah. And I'll say my last point is just figure out why you're asking and why you're trying to take the action that you're taking. A lot of white people, white men, white women, will do things that come off as alleviating guilt for them. So like I've had questions like, is it cultural appropriation for me to have dreadlocks? Because I've been growing my dreadlocks for 20 years and I'm very attached to them and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, do you want to learn about cultural appropriation? Or do you want someone to say it's okay for your dreadlocks? Or say that, exactly. You know, sorry, I understand, and make it like, okay, well, this black person said it's cool, so it's cool.
You're on my
side.
So I
just like, yeah. Figure out, you know, what your intention is and what you're asking.
I have to say, I've been guilty of this up until recently too. Like I would always ask my black friends, like, is it okay that I do this? Is it okay that I say that? Not realizing the tax it was putting on my black friends. And even like about 6 months ago, I asked one of my closest friends, Allison, I asked her, black woman, I have a Maya Angelou shirt and it has the quote, "And still like air I rise," which is one of my favorite poems. And I was wearing it with her and I asked her, I said, is it okay that I wear this? You know, that's such a selfish question to even ask of her, but I'm in my own world, in my own white world. And she said to me, she just the way she answered me said it all to me, and I got the message. She said, well, I don't speak for all black people. She said, but it doesn't bother me, you know, and it was just like it. Just that sentence brought it home to me. And I was like, yeah. Oh my God, I can't, why did, what is, you know?
Well, I didn't think about the triggering thing that you said, because like Ronnie, I'm very much like, I think of the intersectionality of this conversation between queerness and blackness, in that I always feel like I can't expect someone who has never met a gay person to understand what it means to be me. And I've always been of the person, like Mary, my wife's dad was 93 when she told him, which I was like, he knows. Well, guess what? He didn't. And I was pregnant and there was a lot for him to try to understand. And she couldn't help him because she's not a teacher. But I was like, he needs your help to come. He's 93 years old. Like, he's not getting there on his own. Like, and we're never going to see him again. And he's not going to meet his grandchildren. And ultimately, her sister stepped in and helped with that. And so I have always come from that thinking of like, that's what I would do. But I'd never thought of the triggering thing and all of that and the emotional toll it would put on a person to speak for everyone. Mm-hmm, so I think that's a really great point.
Mm-hmm. And Ronnie's a lot nicer than me.
Listen, and I want to say throughout this interview, if Robin and I say anything that
she
is
started with
triggering
me, did you see
for
that?
You,
she said she started with Robin.
Robin and I.
You hear that?
If we say any, like, this is a learning space for us. We're two white women who are trying to do our best, but we mess up. So, like, if we say anything that's triggering or that we said the wrong thing, you have to call us out.
Blame
you
Jamie.
Have to say it. You have to hold us accountable. And I know you would. But we want you to know.
Mia is the person.
That's me.
She's your go-to.
I should have said that in the beginning, that she's the nice one. But like, so for me, you explain the story about your wife and how her dad has never seen a gay person. Like, for me, when it comes to talking about like blackness and queerness, my questions are like, why have you never, you know, been in spaces with black people or queer people? What is it about your life or the energy that you're putting off that no one is like that in your space? Mm. That's weird for me.
Mm-hmm. For me, it's not. It's just the world we live in. I mean, like that.
I mean, how many black people are in the world and how many gay people are in the world? Like,
yeah, no,
like, you just never came across one.
Well, actually, he's got gay people in his family, like, but I think he just never.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, they just not feel like they could say, I'm gay to you.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, I think it's just that he he comes from West Virginia and he's an old, old white dude. And that's it. And that's he's lived in a comfortable bubble. And that was part of the reason where I said to her, I said, I'm not going to go to your dad's house and pretend I'm just fat. I'm 6 months pregnant. We're having a baby. It's time. And that. But we didn't see him for 6 years after that because they couldn't they couldn't talk. They just couldn't figure out how to talk.
For me, what I meant by is the world we live in is we live in this heteronormative world where people still exist in. Where's your mommy? Where's your daddy?
Do you have a boyfriend?
You know, and we get our kids get asked that all the time, you know.
Oh, my God.
Where's your mommy or dad? You know, and when the kids still when their friends still meet me, they still say, did you ask your mom and your dad?
Know.
You know, it's one of those things. It's just the way that people are conditioned.
Yeah.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Like and down to like doctor. Like there were times I went to the doctor alone and they're just like, oh, well, tell your husband. And I'm like, ma'am, you don't see a ring. You didn't ask me. You shouldn't have assumed. I'm uncomfortable. I don't want to be here anymore. Like, and that's not the feeling that you should be having as a pregnant woman. You should be all comfortable with your doctor and who's like checking out your junk. And, but no, you're not, because now she's like, what did the doctor say to me? Like how you made them is how you have them or something like that.
Yeah.
To that effect. Like
you said, through science.
She was trying to say that, I guess, sperm
helps the baby
helps
come
the
out.
Membrane like lose tear or
oh,
do something.
She was trying to say but have sex with your husband.
Have sex.
Yes. Yeah. She was saying basically have sex
so you can help so I can,
oh
so
God,
I can have
wait, come to think of it. Somebody told me to have sex when I was pregnant. I was like, you realize that's not gonna work for me.
Well they no yeah, it's about yeah. it's about so the it orgasm like that. That's supposed to help. The orgasm is supposed
say,
to help that.
Yeah, orgasm is great for that. And that, yes. we can do that. But
orgasms we can do.
What just happened?
I will say that when it comes to like the microaggressions and the aggressions we experience as gay and queer people in the world, in the systemic problems we have in the world for us, versus the microaggressions and the aggressions and the racism you guys face as Black people in the world are different in a major aspect in that we can pass as not gay. We can hide if we need to, if we feel unsafe. Like, for instance, my wife and I were just staying in this upstate town in the country that I don't think has many gay people. And my wife had taken the car to the garage to get it fixed. And I was the one that was going to pick it up. And I had the 2-year-old in the stroller. And my whole walk there, I'm thinking, how am I going to explain who I am? Am I going to say my wife dropped the car off? Am I going to say my wife? Am I like I? But I could make the choice of what the relationship is going to be. I can hide if I have to. I'm not saying you should. And when you have small, when you have kids, you shouldn't hide because you should show pride in your family and your who you are. But
absolutely,
Black people, you can't hide.
Yeah.
And that's a big, big difference between the challenges we face.
Yeah, and I'll add to that, you know, also I'm masculine presenting, and for people who can't see me. And so, and I'm Ronnie, and I'm masculine presenting. So that's also an aspect of our relationship and lesbian, you know, relationship that I can't hide.
No,
when I go down the street,
people know,
you know, most, you
or
know,
they assume.
They assume, you know, oh, so, and then I get this a lot. So are you the man of the relationship? Roll eyes. And I'm like, no, I'm the woman of the relationship. You know, I mean, it's literally the reason I'm here.
That's good.
So even in that sense, it's still like, and on the queer aspect of things, you know, I can't hide. Mia can pass.
Right.
You know, most people still think like, oh, she's straight. She's a straight, beautiful Black woman.
Right, we can't all.
Did anybody just see she called her beautiful? There we go.
I know. And then they look at each other's eyes.
Meanwhile, I'm going to walk out of here and be like, baby, I'm sweating. That's what's going to happen. I go take another shower.
Funny quick story. She was sitting out on our front porch the other day, and we had just gotten off the phone, and the mailman came by, and he was like, hey, ma'am, how are you? He was like, I don't see a ring on your finger. Are you single? You know, he's like automatically. If I was sitting on the front porch, he'd be like, hey, what's up?
Yeah.
That is a lie. Because the old mailman, we have two mailmen. The old mailman did hit on me.
Uh-oh.
Really?
Yes.
She's like, really?
I do get hit on sometimes.
I mean, you're both beautiful, beautiful women.
Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, there goes Jamie. All right. Jamie?
Yeah?
Did you know that in 2020, the number of blended single-parent households and multi-generational families is going to outnumber traditional two-parent nuclear families. Can you believe that?
Wow, I like that statistic. I do.
I know, so do I. And We Are Family, which is a new podcast from the publishers of Parent Magazine, dives deep into the joys and challenges of those redefined families.
I love this. It's another podcast that's an ally to us. I really love that. It highlights non-traditional families like ours. What's not to love?
You are correct. You are correct, lady. Mm-hmm. So everybody who listens to us needs to join celebrity fitness entrepreneur, outspoken LGBTQ parent. Who am I going to say, Jamie?
Sean T.
Sean T, who is also a very good friend of ours.
He's like a very close friend of ours. We're best friends. And his husband, Scotty B. And of course, the co-host, Julia Dennison, Parents Magazine editor and single mama, as they deliver honest conversations about IVF, surrogacy, fostering, and adoption, blended families, LGBTQ parenting, and more.
All right, guys, you're going to want to check this out. You can listen to We Are Family on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and wherever you find your favorite podcasts like ours and theirs.
Yes. And you're going to get a whole lot of Sean T and Julia.
Dig deep. Dig deep.
Deep.
I love that.
Sweating. Well, let's talk about the BLM movement and kids.
Yeah. Where do we start?
Well, how about talking to your, we kind of touched on talking to your kids about the Black Lives Matter movement and George Floyd. Mm-hmm. Where do you start?
I think we get asked all the time, like, do we say what happened to our kids? Do we talk about, like, how real do we sort of get? And I think that for me, that one of our goals as Black parents is that our kids have to be educated on race and the impact that racism is going to have on their lives and on their friends' lives and people that look like them, even if it's not really, even if it never really becomes their full, like, violent truth, like, this will still, you'll still experience these microaggressions or people like you, or you'll see on TV it happening to people like you. So for me, if I have to take that on, I feel that white parents and non-Black parents, they also need to take that on. Like, yeah, you need to be taking on a goal that says, I'm going to actively teach my kids to be anti-racist. It's never going to just be good enough that, you know, you are colorblind, or it's never going to be good enough that you're just not a racist in your home. It's not enough at this point.
No. Yeah.
I think for us, the actual conversation, because of course we're homeschooling right now. And so for us, it started with our 14-year-old making various, you know, comments about the George Floyd incident. And after a while, we were like, hey, we got to have this conversation. You know, we can't put this off any longer. And we also wanted to be a support for him to, you know, kind of process those things and whatever he was feeling. We didn't really know. He was making, like, comments here and there around the house and things that he was seeing online and Twitter.
Can I ask what kind of comments he was making?
He would say, he quite often makes, like, little political comments about Trump and about police officers and just about, like,
I think one of them was they're more concerned about.
Oh, he was talking about rioting. Like, it seems like everybody's more concerned with rioting than they are about that somebody died. And I turned to Ronnie, I was like, okay, we got to talk to him because he's getting angry. And, like, we had been, it's not that we didn't want to talk to him, but I mean, we're processing, trying to figure this out and, like, trying to mourn, like, people that look at death.
While trying to figure out how to support.
Yeah.
While still trying to stay safe because of COVID.
So because
I didn't think about this, sorry to interrupt, but he's a 14-year-old. He's up in the media. He's looking at Twitter. So he's seeing both. He can see both sides. He can see what people are commenting back.
Yes. And he has, like,
and
very
he has,
active
he's like,
conversation with people.
I was in the comments and I'm arguing. I'm like, son, mommy could have told you stay out of the comments.
Don't go in the comments.
Like, and he's like, what should be my clap back? And I'm just like, oh my gosh. Like, please, son, it's okay.
So to add a little even more information, we have a queer son. He's very opinionated.
Good for him.
But so he started making those comments. And so then when we talked about having the conversation with him, I was like, Ronnie, we really need to do it. So we just took the opportunity to sit all of them down. Not so much the two-year-old. She doesn't sit still for that long. But what we did say, we just started the conversation, and how I would advise other parents to start the conversation is just asking them what they already know and how they already feel, because they know things. The stuff that, like, our son, I realized that we're blessed to have a son that talks to us.
Yeah.
Stuff that he used to come home from school talking about, he heard this on the bus, he heard that, his cousin told him this.
They know more than you're
giving them credit.
Right. That's a good point.
Yeah.
Even the tiny ones, like, even our 7-year-old, she'll, like, make comments, and I'm like, where did you?
Yeah.
Where did that come
they hear
from?
Everything though.
Like, yeah, and they hear wonders. Everything.
Oh God, they're always listening.
Yeah.
I always tell our 7-year old, I was like, you're always like inside of my mouth. Like whenever like I'm talking, I just see her little eyes like.
Yeah.
So I have to be like, what do you say? We always have to have a filter. That's what she says.
Mm-hmm. So, I say censor myself. Like I when I'm ready to stop, I'm like, all right, I'm tired of censoring myself. Everybody go to bed. Yeah. Let's go. I need some adult like time to be able to say fuck sometimes.
Right? Come on.
You don't have to worry about little ears. And I'm like, oh. But you know, the conversation definitely started from, you know, questions. Hey, you know, what's been going on with you? What have you heard about protesting and Black Lives Matter movement and George Floyd? And he had a mouthful, and we were able to just to kind of piggyback off what he had already shared with us. Like, mm-hmm. I see you have a question.
No, I don't have a question. I think that's an amazing way in.
We really let him lead the conversation and answered whatever it is that he wanted to know about.
A little guidance, you know, but we also don't want him to go off in a tangent.
I was just going
to
say that does a great parenting technique in general. They talk about when you talk to your kids about sex, that's how you're supposed to do it. You're supposed to kind of like see what they know and don't tell them more than they're ready for. And that kind of, you know, that like have it be like a led conversation, but they're leading it, which I think is a great technique.
In our first podcast, we were talking about age appropriation, and we had to kind of
back up
from that, because it's like every child is different. Mm-hmm. Some children are 7, but they act like they're, you know, 12. You know, some kids are 12 and they act like they're 6.
Like, if you have an only child and they're 7, they're like 17 in their head.
So, needless to say, some kids are more mature than others.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so it's just a matter of gauging. And as a parent, you pretty much got a handle on like what kid is what. Like, London is that child who, like she says, she's always here. She's always listening to everything.
And she's very emotionally intelligent.
Very.
Like, if there's a conversation about how someone's feeling, how they might be feeling, she's like on top of it. And she has like the vocabulary to match.
So she was. We were kind of shocked.
I don't know. But she uses words
all
the time.
She's always using these, like, and I'm like,
so for her, we talked about, you know, do we have the same conversation with our 14-year-old that we have with our 7-year-old. And I say to that, like, you know, the earlier that you start explaining race and, you know, the role that it plays in our lives, that's how it makes it easier for your children to develop empathy and compassion, just a sense of justice at an earlier age. So if she, like, one thing that I will say, if she doesn't understand something, she's going to be like, mommy, I don't understand that part. And so if you start talking and they don't understand, then okay, let them tell you that they don't understand, or ask them like, okay, do you understand what mommy's talking about? And everyone knows their kids. You can see on their face if they're really picking up or if they're not, but it's not the only time that you get to have the conversation. Eventually it's going to get to a point where they start remembering these things. Like even this time when we had the conversation about police brutality, they're like, oh, we talked about this last year or a few months ago or something like that. And they start learning a little, remembering a little bit more each time. So you want to build it up.
Yeah.
Like start with, you know, the appropriate terms that you feel like they understand, or appropriate situations that you feel like they may understand, where there would be like, you know, my best friend was here and he was saying that he went for a run in our neighborhood and there was a white father teaching his daughter how to ride a bike. And so, you know, there was the murder of Ahmaud Arbery.
Yep.
And he's like, so the dad took that moment and like stopped my best friend and said to his daughter, he's like, is there anything wrong with what this man is doing? And she's like, no, daddy, like, there's nothing wrong. He's like, great. I'm glad you feel like that. Like, just capitalizing on your teaching moments, because we don't have many Black men in our neighborhood just running around. Right. So he took that moment to say, what can I teach my daughter about seeing someone that's different than her, and how generally white people or non-Black people feel fear when it's, or that's what's causing these incidents is fear of Black people, and normalizing that for her, normalizing Black people doing everyday damn things that we do.
Right.
I think that's awesome. When he told me that, because he was here over the weekend for the proposal, and I was like, man, that's awesome to know that I'm living in a neighborhood with people who are so conscious of, you know, what's going on, and so willing to teach, you know, their children, which I think is one of the ways that all of this is going to end for us, for our children and their children.
Yeah.
It's all of us collectively coming together and actively working on making sure that Black people are not seen as a threat.
Everyone's being intentional.
Yeah.
asking your child what they know about race before you go into your lesson on race is the best idea I've heard of so far. And I did not do that when I started our conversation.
We started lecturing. I didn't do that either, Jamie.
And you should, when you're asking them, you just want to make sure that you're listening, because it's going to form how you respond. So if you're listening to them truly, then you can hear if they're like starting to form biases or stereotypes or being judgmental. Mm-hmm. And if you don't ask them first, you have no idea what those ideas in their head already look like.
You're letting your child be the leader there. And I think it's important to note that that is a way in for both non-Black parents and Black parents. Mm-hmm. Like, this is a conversation that can be equal for non-Black and Black parents. Whereas, like, a lot of times when you're talking about race, like I think we have slightly different conversations that have to go on. Like, I don't have to teach my son about microaggressions. I don't have to teach my son to watch out for cops, really. Like, you know, so there are different conversations, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like at least that way in is something we can all do to start this conversation. Oh, absolutely. And I love that.
Absolutely. Yeah. I would say it was like from your end, like we have to teach our kids more so connect with our kids and say, yeah, that was a microaggression that you felt, that thing that made you feel like this small, this is what that was. And the conversation on your end would be like, you know, making a statement like that, that's a microaggression, or behaving in this way, that's a microaggression.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So that's where we differ a little bit. We gotta catch them and, you know.
Yeah. And also I think that part of it is that it's gonna take for white people and non-Black people to get a little bit uncomfortable. Because I feel like there are everyday things that are just based in white supremacy norms and based in implicit biases that are comfortable.
Yeah.
And so if this is the way that I'm used to living, am I willing to give up that comfort for someone else to
become
more comfortable? Yeah. And that's a hard decision.
Yeah.
For a lot of people.
Yeah. These are hard conversations. These are hard conversations as white people, because I can only speak for me, but I'm afraid I'm going to say the wrong thing all the time. Yeah. I don't want to say the wrong thing. I want to be the best ally I can be. And so, yeah, you get out. You have to not be afraid to be messy with this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's so hard to do. I learned
about that when we were originally starting the podcast and we had some trans conversations, and somebody was teaching us, because we were trying to figure out how we could be the best ally to the trans community, because we're like a couple of like old lesbians who came out in the 90s, for God's sakes. We're like, I don't, you know, like the language has changed. I'm like, I'm at home having Taco Tuesday. Like, I don't know what everybody's calling themselves. Like, I'm an old lesbian. Like, that's what I know. Mm-hmm. So like we were trying to like get educated. And the thing that the woman told us, which I thought was really, really helpful, is she said, if you make a mistake, like, don't go into like your guilt about it. Make some big deal. Just go, oh, I'm sorry. And then just keep the conversation moving. And I thought that was so incredibly helpful, because I think sometimes like as a white guilt person, one might think I have to show how sorry I am, but not thinking through the position I'm putting you in by putting the spotlight on you and continuing to draw attention to the thing that I just fucked up.
And now you're making, you're making that person comfort you.
Yes.
That marginalized person comfort you when you're the one who messed up. Just own it.
Yeah. Just say sorry.
Yeah.
Own it.
And do better next time.
Yeah.
Just move forward.
I promise to do better next time. I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
I love this conversation, because you guys are clearly, you know, on the right path to, you know, supporting, you know, just, you know, queer community and, you know, BLM, you know, community. You know, you guys are on the right path, because you keep saying one word that I love, and that's educate yourselves, educate yourself. That self-education it's just, I think that's the way. Like, we're here to assist. Like Mia says, I'm here to answer questions. Mm-hmm. You know, if you don't understand something, you know, there are a lot of things culturally about Black people that, you know, I'm pretty sure that white people don't understand. That's okay. We're here to answer those questions, but at least you know, made the first step. I think for me, if I had to dwindle it down to what non-Blacks can do for the Black community right now, that would be educate or listen, empathize and support. Because Mia said it, you know, it's not good enough just to also, like she said, just to feel uncomfortable, but maybe to put yourself in a position to make others feel more comfortable. And support looks like maybe using your platform, you know, to, you know, lift voices of, you know, trans community or Black Lives Matter community or whatever, you know,
and taking like what happens in these conversations and bringing those to those kind of other conversations where like a family member says something a little racist,
yeah,
a little homophobic, a little whatever, and then using that as an opportunity to be like, hey, like, I'm going to speak up now. Like, this is my moment where I get to talk and have the shine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the things that's hard. I wanted to ask about, I mean, it's not even really asking. It's more just like, I want to take like temperature of everyone in this conversation. Like, I think it's not, for me personally, it's not a hopeful time. We're in a pandemic. We have a president who's not leading and who is literally dog whistling racist language. And like, so like, there's maybe a portion of the country that's out here trying to educate themselves or whatever, but how do we remain hopeful that there's that other portion of the country that's just not, and they're digging their heels in and putting up All Lives Matter banners and doing all this other shit instead of just like trying to be an ally and trying to be like, yeah, like I see systemic racism. Like I'm struggling with remaining positive. Like I liked what you said about the kids, teaching our kids. And I was thinking of some of the moments that we've been having with our kids. And I know Jamie's doing it too. And that's gives me a glimmer of hope, but I don't know, like, if I can't find hope, how do you find hope?
I find hope a few ways, and some of them are going to sound a little odd, but when I see that Black people and our allies are literally like burning this place down, the things that are not serving us, that brings me hope.
Mm.
Like, we're not prioritizing property. We're prioritizing our livelihoods. We are also out here voting, and we are out here, like, you know, in New York, they have all these, you know, Black gay men, like progressive people going into Congress, like little things like that. Like I latch onto those little things, like, yes, over here. Yes, this, yes, you, mm-hmm. like all of that. I hold on to that, and that gives me hope. And I know that when I meet with people that are willing to flip this shit upside down, that and people that are not just complicit, that gives me hope, because it may not be my lifetime, but I know that the generation after me has a hell of a role model, that it will not stay this way.
And I
think that Gen Z, that's also hope right there. I mean, the tenacity, all of what we're seeing in them, they're like, we're not standing for this shit.
They're just like, when I see the amount of protests like organized by teenagers and high school students, I'm just like, yes, children,
and non-Black and you know, non-Black communities. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're like, we're standing with you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't give a shit who says what.
I'm just gonna say, white people have never been so nice to me in my life.
Everybody's trying so hard.
Everyone is trying so hard, and there are parts of me that wants to be like pessimistic, like, oh, you're just doing this to feel better. But then, no, it's like, also, you've never done this before, and we've said all these things before. So maybe this is the time. Maybe there is a change.
You have to take every little win, huh? Like,
I gotta hold. That's how I get up every day, holding on to that glimpse of hope, because that's all we have. You know, if we don't have that, we don't have anything.
Mm.
Or else we just gonna burn everything down and burn with it. You know, because
and I just feel like Black people, especially African Americans specifically, our people have made it this far. We've made it very, very far. Like, our lives look nothing like they did before. And I feel like if we just keep on the way, not necessarily maybe doing the way that we've done things, but that if we can make it this far, we can get where we're going.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I want to ask you before we go to like takeaways for both of our listeners, is there any topic that we didn't cover that we want to talk about, we should talk about? I mean, I feel like we hit a lot of shit in there.
We did.
Good stuff.
Oh, I did want to say something I thought of, and then I got distracted because I'm a mom. In the conversation with kids, like, I think it's important. A lot of the movies and things that are out here focus on history. So yes, it's important to teach your kids the history of all that has brought us to where we are today, but also letting them know what's happening currently.
Mm-hmm.
So that they know that it's not this like distant history. I feel like in the beginning, we kind of made that mistake with our son. Like, he was like, racism, that doesn't really happen. Like, you know, people don't get lynched. It does, like it didn't exist and it wasn't a thing. So making sure that you're teaching your history lesson, but you're also teaching current lessons is very, very important.
I have to read what you wrote in the notes. Because I love what you wrote. You said, you run the risk of that distant time seeming like that's the boogeyman.
Yeah.
And it's not real.
Yeah, it seemed like it's a fairy tale and it's not real and it doesn't happen.
Right. Of course, history is a hard thing to fathom, especially as a young mind, even for me.
And that's a parallel too to the queer community. Like we had Richie Jackson on and he talked a lot about you got to know your gay history because, you know, gay men, you know, trans women, trans men, we're all still in danger, you know, of mm-hmm. bad things happening. So it's like we all need to know our history and where we come from so you don't take that for granted. Mm-hmm. Well, in terms of the takeaways, you have some things that you had written down about perfectionism, like implicit biases. Do you want to like go into a little bit of that stuff?
Yeah. And so I thought about it earlier when Jamie was talking about just not wanting to say the wrong thing and wanting to be perfect and not being willing to get messy. Like those are all elements of like white supremacy norms, yeah. Like having to be a perfectionist, having that fear of conflict, like, you know, being just a little defensive because you don't want anybody to like jump on you or things like that. Like, so you like just being able to identify those things and then interrupt them when they're happening, like stop your own, like yourself or your teammates or who or your network, stop them in their tracks. Like, you know, this is what that sounds like. You know, that sense of urgency is another one that I've had to tackle in the workplace. Like, no, you don't need something right now when your Black coworker is, you know, is processing a trauma that you didn't even consider this day. You know, hoarding of power and wanting to keep, like I said, not wanting to get uncomfortable, not wanting to give up, you know, the leg up that you have on the rest of the world for fear of where that may leave you. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So being willing to interrupt those things, like those definitely my takeaway for the listeners. Like if you want to be impactful, those are the things that you have to acknowledge and then interrupt and intervene.
You have to be your own police officer in your head up there.
Yes.
And,
that's good.
And get messy.
You gotta police yourself on that one.
I think one of the things I've heard loudest and clear is like, just to always say something. I can think of times where, you know, family members have said things and I just like, you know, close my mouth, leave the room, or just like, you don't say anything. Cause I'm so
wine, turn around, yeah. Roll my eyes.
Cause I'm so as a general rule, I thought that was like growth for me because I'm so fucking argumentative that I was trying to be like, just shut your mouth, walk away. But now I'm like realizing it just can't shut my mouth anymore. I have to be like, if you're going to do that, don't say that around me. Like, I don't want to hear that. That's not okay. You know, that's part of that uncomfortableness that we all have.
And run the risk of making everyone in the room look at you like,
and a little
the hell are they talking about?
I mean, which, let's be honest, it's me. They're going to be looking at me like that for something else too. Yeah, no, so it's
what.
Fine.
Yeah,
it's
no
fine.
Matter what.
Yeah. I think I stopped operating that way a long time ago. I had someone say to me once before, silence is agreement. You know, silence is agreement.
Oh, right.
Like when you have someone in your you know, audience who's obviously saying the wrong thing, who obviously has some type of, you know, racial bias or whatnot, and you say nothing. You just let it slide. You're agreeing, in silence.
Yeah, I would take it a step forward and say silence is violence, because if you're not speaking up against this is going to continue. Yeah. But I'm sorry, I cut you off. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, that's perfect. I mean, because this is how we change the world. I mean, it may sound minute, but these conversations in our living room, in our bedrooms, and now with our family members, this is how we change the world later on down the line. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm for one, I'm glad you guys are in the podcasting space and that you're bringing your really amazing voices to the podcasting world. Like, people are gonna need to hear it.
White parents can listen to your podcast too.
Yeah.
And we
just
should.
Like, absolutely. Just like straight people can listen to our podcast.
The lessons are for all. The complaints are for all. Exactly. The venting is for all. Yes.
The personality is for all.
Yeah.
Let's tell everyone where they can get your podcast and all that stuff, and we can do the same.
So Transparency Podcast, that's TRANSPARENTSY Podcast is on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, all the things.
All the platforms.
Basically all of
the big platforms. Google Podcasts. It's anywhere that you can search Transparency. And I just want to thank you guys for the warm welcome.
Community. Yeah, listen, but also are there places I know you guys have, you know, like social groups and stuff, the social media.
Yes. So Transparency Podcast on Instagram. You can follow us there. I am on Instagram at Big Mama Mia. If there are any Black LGBTQ+ moms or parents listening, or parents of Black LGBTQ+ children, listening. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram at Black LGBTQ plus moms.
I love it. Go give them a follow right now. Go follow them.
Yes.
Yeah. And we're If These Ovaries Could Talk, and we're on all the social platforms, and just find us. That's fine. Thank you guys so much for reaching out to us and for I feel like this is our first podcast collaboration, and I think I feel pretty good about it. I gave it a 9.5.
I did so good.
Well, you go put your babies to bed, do your thing.
Yes.
I got to go see how crazy my wife is right now.
Tell her we owe her a drink.
Right.
Okay. She'll take a beer.
Oh, that was such a good conversation.
Wow. Yeah, it was.
I'm so glad we did that. I am too.
It's always scary to have these conversations.
Yeah, but it's important to do it. And I think that was like one of the biggest highlights, is that we have to be scared and we have to do it anyway. We all have to be outside our comfort zone.
Yeah, I think the more you do it, the easier it gets. I already have been, like, full disclosure, we did this episode 2 days ago. We're recording this outro a couple of days later. And I've been going over in my head when I interrupted Ronnie the whole time, because I interrupted her and I said, well, I would actually say silence is violence. I keep going over that in my head, like, Jamie, why did you interrupt her? I'm so mad at myself, because she had a really good point. And then I came in with my white view. So, you know what I mean? Like, this is hard.
In fairness, you shouldn't interrupt anyone. I mean, but we do all the time. That's just our podcast. So don't beat yourself up for that,
but
for God's
especially
sakes.
In that moment. And I've been going, so I want you all to know I did that.
Okay.
And I've been going through it in my head for days. So
let yourself off the hook.
You know, but it's just, these are hard. But I think the more we do it, the easier it's going to get.
Yeah. So, I had a lot of takeaways personally of things I can do better. And I like that's, yeah. It was just a great learning conversation. And I thought all the intersectionality was really, really just rich for conversation, mm-hmm. like places for me to learn and ways that I can teach my kids. And yeah. You know, it was great.
It's important. We're doing the work. Please join us on this journey.
And please listen to the Transparency podcast mm-hmm, now. Mm-hmm. They should like put them in your queue right behind us, because yeah. I feel like they're another great voice that we should all be listening to.
Totally. Go follow them too on their socials.
Yeah. Follow them on their socials. But also, like, if you have thoughts about this particular episode, you know, hit us on social. Like, let's chat about it.
Yeah, let's chat. Don't be too angry at me, though. I'm just kidding.
Oh, my God, Jamie. What's wrong with you today?
I'm kidding. Oh. All right. Well, let's keep this conversation going, friends. Join us on our social. You can find us on Ovaries Talk on Twitter, Ovaries_Talk on Instagram, If These Ovaries Could Talk on Facebook. And we also have a private community there that you can join and talk to other listeners. You can also join our community on Patreon at patreon.com/ovariestalk, and you're going to get bonus content. I'm talking videos of the episodes that are unedited, which is so fun to watch. My mother says so. You can also subscribe to us on YouTube to catch up on all of our Ovaries Talk live streams. And don't forget, we do a live stream every Wednesday and Friday at 2 p.m. on Facebook, where we're just talking to you.
We're sorry for that. But if you miss the live stream, you catch them up on YouTube.
Yeah.
And we also want to thank our sponsor, Hello Tushy, and our sponsor, the new podcast, We Are Family, for making this show possible. We thank you.
Yes.
And we thank all you patrons for making the show possible as well.
Stay healthy, everyone.
Stay sane. Stay away from everyone. You know,
don't
as much
touch
as you
your
can.
Face. Don't touch it. Just don't do it.
Don't touch your face. All right. Jamie gets any weirder today, let's do it. Eggs.
Ovaries.
Out.
Out.
Bye. Oh, Helen says bye too.
Helen.
Okay. She says bye. I know she's trying to insert herself into the outro. It's always.
Always. Always. Helen, just play your solitaire. Come on.
If these ovaries could talk, they would say, eggs, ovaries, out.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.